With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is, boom, Nick Wright right there. CC, good to have you back. We got a lot to get to today. We are going to start with Sam Darnold's debut for the New York Jets, which began with a pick six. First snap of his career. Boom, back the other way. As they like to say in football terms, not ideal. Twitter had a field day with that one until Darnold composed himself, turned around, got back out there, and led the team from there, throwing for 198 yards, two touchdowns. The Jets' first-round pick only had four incomplete passes the rest of the game. He also got a lot of help from his defense, who picked off Matt Stafford and Matt Castle, five times. Jets beat the Lions 48-17. Here's Sam Darnold on his first-ever NFL game.
On that interception, I was pretty nervous. I'm not going to lie to you guys. But after that, you know, put it behind me. I think, you know, that after the crowd got really loud after that pick, it was just, you know, oh, shoot. And then I was like, okay, here we go. You know, can't get much worse than that. So it was really that kind of thinking that was going on in my head. And then just, you know, played and knew that we had a good team. We have a really, really good team. So I knew that if I just did my job, took what the defense gave me that I was going to be, you know, able to go out there and look back and have a successful game.
Any little more light in that press conference, but Sam Darnold was light enough. All right, see, how impressive were Sam Darnold in the Jets in last night's rout? Season opener for them.
Not just the numbers and not just what's on TV, but it's hard to start an NFL game, let alone a career, the way he did. You can't start worse than that. You're on the road. Detroit fans are into football, and they were into that game. Huge interception, momentum in the game. Like, I'm really impressed with how he got it all back together. I like the press conference, the fact that he admitted that I lost my stuff. That was the first play of the game because his parents asked him before the game, because I believe his parents have a lot to do with the success, how they've raised him, how level-headed he is, him and his sister, both Division I athletes at a high level, and how they treated him and everything. It played a role in how he calmed down in this game and realized, I'm a good enough football player, I'm on a good team, and let me get back into the game. I thought the offensive coordinator did a great job. I talked with the team a little over a week ago, and I thought the Jets would be a lot more improved because of the confidence they had, not in who's in the room, but more importantly in who Sam Darnold is. He's been a leader ever since he's been at Little League playing football. And Nick looked at me a little side-eye when we had him in the studio because I happened to have my Hall of Fame jacket and I had a Hall of Fame tie. And I gave him the Hall of Fame tie. And people say, oh, now Chris Carter's on the bandwagon. No, this kid is made of the right stuff. I mean, he's been a winner. He wasn't always the top player coming out of high school. I think he was the fifth-ranked quarterback in Southern California coming out of high school. He goes to USC, wins the job, opens up on Monday night in New York City. Phenomenal. You couldn't have a better start for a young kid in a big city like this, turned around a franchise. I'm really, really happy for him. But he showed me something because I know that he panicked. And he admitted that, but he went on to play a spectacular football game. It's hard to be better than he was in a debut.
And how, because it's hard to start worse. It's not like all pick sixes are awful. Worst thing you can do as a quarterback. This one was particularly awful. It wasn't the ball got batted at the line. No. This one was all his doing, and maybe the offensive coordinators to a degree. I mean, he basically throws a cross-field jump pass off one leg. He does everything wrong. Little league type of stuff, really. And you said forget the numbers, but I do want the audience to know what the numbers were from that moment forward. From that moment forward, he completed 80% of his passes for nearly 10 yards per attempt, two touchdowns, no picks, and a 141 rating. From that moment forward, he played a nearly flawless game. He probably could have had gaudier numbers if the Jets weren't beating the brakes off the Lions so badly to where they didn't need to open up the offense much at all when Stafford couldn't stop throwing picks. It was incredibly impressive to overcome that moment, because that's the type of thing that he had been waiting for this moment his entire life. And all of a sudden, teams typically, if you give up a defensive or special teams touchdowns in the NFL, you lose 4 out of 5 games. Mm-hmm. Like, one play like that can cost your team one of its 16 chances to win. And for him to overcome it, man, the Jets have to feel great about their selection, about them trading up to 3 to be able to go get him.
And wouldn't you say it says more about him as a person, which you talk to a lot, than him as the you know, having that football acumen, those skills, that he was able to compose himself and come out? Because sure, you can come out with all the skills in the world, but if you don't have the wherewithal to be able to come out, compose yourself as the face of this team, as the youngest kid to ever start, you know, basically an NFL game.
Yeah. 99-year history.
Well, since the merger.
And you'd like to think the Jets said, okay, you know, we love what we have, more because he was able to compose himself than just what he was able to do afterwards.
Well, part of the reason why you draft guys like this is, what are their intangibles? Because everyone's got talent. Let's not get on this thing where we say, you know something, give me the guy that's smart and not talented. No. Because there are a lot of guys that have both. And that's what Sam Darnold had. I like the fact that he's a very, very good athlete. You could see that he got out of the pocket. You could see that in the pocket he was very, very comfortable, always kept a nice wide base. He has spectacular arm talent. Like, he's the reason why, before the draft, I thought he was the most ready. He's always ready to throw. He has this little leadership thing, too. And I saw that when I was with the Jets, that it's hard. It was like Baker Mayfield. It's something that we saw. It's just a little intangible that people want to follow him. The Jets got it right. Because, I mean, we're going to be going through a lot of, you know, evaluating young players and everything. And very seldom can you just stop and say, regardless of what happens to him, we believe that the Jets got it right.
Well, and I don't know how you're going to feel about this, but I couldn't watch yesterday's New York Jets game without thinking about the New York Giants, the team that could have prevented the Jets from getting it right, and the team that is – the Jets traded up to 3 on speculation. They traded up to 3 with the hope, all right, we like 2 of these guys. What are the odds the Jets really thought there's 3 franchise quarterbacks in this draft?
Yeah.
They probably felt, we like 2 of these guys.
Right.
Maybe both will be available. At least one of them will be available.
And it was on the table that both of them would be gone. That the Giants would take a quarterback and the Browns would take a quarterback.
It absolutely was on the table that they could have been sitting there and saying, all right, do we take Project Josh Allen? Do we take Josh Rosen? Or did we trade up to 3 so we can draft Saquon Barkley? Like, and the Giants, no matter what anyone thinks of Eli, you now have good reason to believe the Jets are in good position at the most important position in sports for the next decade. And the Giants are wondering if they're in a good position, instead of the next 10 years, for the next 10 games. It's not just because they're New York and New York. It's because they were drafting 2 and 3 and because there was so much discussion surrounding whether or not the Giants should take this exact player in that spot.
All right, if the Jets were happy with their decision to take Sam Darnold, how do you think the Lions felt on the other side with their decision to bring in Matt Patricia as their head coach? How alarmed were you by what Detroit did and how much they struggled last night?
I'm not alarmed, but, I mean, the Lions have been the Lions for 50 years. There's a reason why Stafford hadn't won a game in the playoffs. I don't think they've won a playoff game in over 20 years. I mean, so I'm not surprised. I know last night they was probably looking for Jim Caldwell's number. They fired him after 2-9-7 seasons.
One of them with a playoff berth attached to it.
Just because you sit in a room with people don't mean that you're going to get everything from. And as far as Belichick and his disciples, it's real. I mean, look at the last 5 coaches. Charlie Weiss, Romeo Cannell, Eric Mangini, Josh McDaniels, and Bill O'Brien. All these guys have losing records as head coaches. Now, I don't know what Belichick does to him. He tells him, hey, leave all your football knowledge in New England. That's the New England way, and go about your business. But I think it's more than Belichick. I think it's number 12. Because all these guys, when they leave number 12, that's what they face. Am I surprised about Matt Stafford? No. He was going to have one or two games like this. He's been doing that the last 5 or 6 years. He's going to throw 3 or 4 interceptions. You're going to be. The problem is we normally see him throw 300 or 400 yard games, 300 or 400 yard games in a row, and then he has a bad one. You're like, you know, that's a.
And they typically don't happen at home. Last year, he only had 3 picks at home in the whole season. This year, he had 4 picks at home in the opener. But one thing that's tough about week one is we assume we know who's bad and who's good. And so when a team that we think is going to be bad beats another team, we're like, well, that team must be awful. So like week one last year, we thought the Jags were going to be mediocre again. So when the Jags, we made the Jags week one dominating win over Houston about Houston must be trash rather than Jacksonville could be good. When we saw the Vikings put up 30 on the Saints in week one last year, we're like, oh, same old Saints. Defense can't stop nobody. Instead of being like, wow, the Vikings are awesome. So in week one, we got to be careful about who we're giving value to and who we're giving credit to.
Week number one, you have more overreaction. One reason is because people are so excited about football. They're so excited about their teams. And I can't believe I waited all this long. And, yeah, my team's better. Or I waited all this time and, oh, my season's over with. Yeah. So there's too much of that in week number one. Great observation.
All right, we're going to talk a lot more about this game. There was another Monday night game last night as well. Coming up, what went so wrong for John Gruden and the Raiders? Next on First Things First. First Things First podcast is on the way, but first, a quick word from Lightstream. If you're thinking about saving money this summer, why not start by paying less interest on your credit card balances? Refinance with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. It's an easy way to save hundreds to thousands of dollars and lower your interest rate. Lightstream offers credit card consolidation loans from 5.89% APR with autopay. You could get your funds as soon as the day you apply. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a great interest rate and no fees. So say goodbye to high interest credit cards this summer and start saving with Lightstream. And get this. First Things First listeners can save even more with an additional interest rate discount on top of Lightstream's already low rates. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/FTF. That's Lightstream, LightStreamSTREAM.com/FTF. Subject to credit approval, rate includes a 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com for more information. To the NFL now, Sam Darnold connecting with Robbie Anderson for his first career touchdown pass. That's your guy now, C.
Robbie Anderson, man, has been spending some time with him. The kid's going to make some big plays for the Jets. People thought the Jets didn't have weapons. Sam Darnold's going to develop some weapons. First game, Nick. 7 different receivers with those 16 completions. That's one of the more impressive stats of his first night.
Terrell Pryor had a nice game. Quincy Enunwa had a nice game. Now, this was Robbie's only catch, but it was a hell of a catch, and it was a huge play. And this was when the game was still close before Stafford started throwing the game away.
All right, finally, Raiders-Rams, Marshawn Lynch. Let us know why he's in beast mode all the time.
All right, we got some really, really low IQ plays here by a couple of the Rams. You've got Aqib,
58.
You got 58 jumping on the pile. And watch, Aqib Talib is trying to force a fumble by pulling him into the end zone. Watch Talib on the back end, pulls him in, 58 jumps on top.
Talib, he's not. That's not a bad play.
Okay, so just 58.
58, yes.
Yeah.
Like, wait, let me say 58. What,
58. He jumps on the pile right.
Yeah.
There and helps him go in the end zone.
Not real smart.
Come on, guys.
Beast mode had a bunch of assistants.
a bunch.
Pushing him.
Right.
You know, I mean,
a lot in white jerseys.
Yes.
All right, let's stick with that game. John Gruden's debut versus the Rams' debut, since none of their players really played this preseason. Todd Gurley picked up where he left off last season, 147 total yards and a touchdown, while Derek Carr struggled. He threw 3 picks in a 33-13 loss. Not the way John Gruden wanted it to go, but he did show up at the podium afterwards anyway, ready for a barrage of questions.
Obviously, I don't think it was a smashing debut. By any sense, we need to get more pass rush, and that goes for all of us.
Whether it was bad throws, which there were bad throws, miscommunications, all that kind of stuff. So stuff that usually actually does happen in a first game, but you don't really, you know, pay the consequence for them all the time. But we did today, and that's my fault. I got to do a better job for our team. and I will.
All right, Nick, coach said they need a better pass rush. Carr said he needs to have some better throws. Does that pretty much sum it up? What was your reaction to the Raiders' struggles last night?
That's part of the story, but it doesn't sum it up. My reaction last night was that looked like a really poorly coached football team. You can't have 145 yards of penalties in the first half. And I know there were two big pass interference penalties, but they had 10 first half penalties. That's the most in the database I have access to of anyone on record. First half penalties, any game since at least 2001. You can't go into the game with a halftime lead where, by the way, those scripted opening plays, they looked great. March right down the field. Once the script was gone, what did you do offensively? And in the second half, get dominated the way they did. And so to get outscored 23-0 from halftime on after having a 13-10 lead. Yes, Derek Carr made some awful mistakes. And yes, the Raiders, man, if they only had an all-pro pass rusher, it would be nice. But as Gruden is the face of this team, and when you have every single one of your offensive linemen have a pre-snap penalty in the first half, every single one, like that, if that's not coaching, then I don't know what is. I don't know what you're doing. So a lot of takeaways from Oakland, none of them very good.
Now, I got to ease up on Gruden just a little bit because guys jumping offside, that's not the head coach's fault. I mean, they're out there. Everyone knows the snap count. Now, it was a loud environment. Yeah, it was. But they're the home team.
Right.
All right. But that's not the coach's fault. That's lack of mental focus. All right. You can't blame that on the coach. These guys being paid a lot of money. These are grown men. These aren't kids. Now, John Gruden's got a certain responsibility, but he can't manage the game when guys don't know what they're supposed to do. Offensive players, the advantage that we have, we know where the ball's going. You know the other advantage that we have? We know the snap count. So that's just some of the basics in football that you're going to see early in the season. So that's not Gruden's fault. The lack of creativity in the second half, the lack of use of Jordy Nelson and Amari Cooper, those are all things that, yes, John Gruden, he has to be able to answer for those. Now, as far as him not having no pass rush, that would be like me emptying my refrigerator, emptying all my cupboards, taking all my groceries and giving it away to some people who deserve it.
For future groceries.
Yeah. And then I sit around like Jenna and say, I'm hungry.
Okay.
because based on your decisions that I'm going to eat a certain amount of things.
To come out of the press conference and be like, oh, yeah, we really lacked a pass rush.
Well, let me hold up. I have the stat sheet here. I want to check real quick. The 2019 first-round pick, zero quarterback hits, zero sacks. 2020 first-round pick, he had the same. One more thing, $60 million of cap space. He also had zero quarterback hits. So those assets didn't really get the job done for him last night.
Yeah, now going late into the fourth quarter, were the Raiders still in this game? Yes, just like an NFL game, a guy makes a play. They're within one score. Yes. The Rams are just a better football team. So let's not, as Nick said, let's not overreact to John Gruden and everything he's doing, all right? If the beverages aren't cold in Oakland, it's going to be his fault. Everything's going to be his fault, but let's give him the things that we know that he's responsible for. The overall lack of discipline with the team, which you bring in John Gruden there for, they did not have that. The lack of big plays or creativity. Now, Nick, I know that both of you, we mentor people, but you're not thinking that one day the mentee is going to outshine me, not until I'm long over. But that's what we had there. I had a guy that was really, really creative, and that's Sean McVay.
Yeah.
And then you have the guy who supposedly taught him that. Obviously, that book must be a little old or stale because the young prodigy has added volume to that. So to me, those were the impressive things about it. The first 15 plays, I thought you made a great point. They did move down the field, getting the ball to Cook, the tight end, isolating the strong safety in coverage. But after those adjustments, what did they do? And they didn't make many offensive adjustments.
And this is something we saw also in that Bears-Packers game.
Yes.
Where the Nagy had those first 15 plays scripted brilliantly. And the Bears moved the ball. But as soon as they ran out of script, they ran out of the ability to move the football. Now, in that Bears-Packers game, you can say, all right, that's Mitch Trubisky. It's a second-year player, new coach. That is not the case with Oakland and their quarterback. And that is the overall bigger concern. Like Gruden said, the subtext of trading away Khalil Mack was, we already got a $20-plus million a year player. He's our quarterback.
And he's part of the reason why I came out of the broadcasting booth.
Right.
He said it, to coach you.
Best quarterback I've ever had. Eat that, Rich Gannon. How you feel about that, Brad Johnson? Like, so, right? So that's what he said. Now, we also should note that's a little different for Gruden. Gruden, all of his success has come with older quarterbacks, all 30-plus, and all guys who would take Gruden's brand of coaching because they had been journeymen turned starters, guys that weren't necessarily fully established, minted franchise quarterbacks. Derek Carr looked awful. Derek Carr was throwing the ball away without pressure on third down as if there were pressure. And the, listen, the pick six to Marcus Peters is going to happen, but this pick here, I don't know how you make that throw. You feel a pass rush that isn't there yet, and you just throw it up for grabs. That was driving in a 10-point game. The game is still, you're still alive right there. That's a brutal play. That I can't put on Gruden. That's on their quarterback.
And let's just look at the other side of it, too. The Raiders definitely did struggle, but the Rams played a fairly complete game yesterday, even though they hadn't played together a lot in the preseason, and it took them at least a half, CC, before they were all in sync. But it seemed like that second half, they were sort of firing on all cylinders.
Pro football is about trying to fill out the opposition. No one's trying to knock a team out in the first or second quarter. We know these games come down typically to one score, and we're trying to get it into the third quarter, make the halftime adjustments. And in the fourth quarter, you're really going to see the best of each team because you got three quarters of action. You've made all the adjustments. That's what if the Rams are going to be the team that we thought that we think that they are, that these are how they're going to win games. You have to feel teams out, feel what they're doing. McVay called a great game. Goff played a good game. They took a lot of shots down the field. So even his completion percentage, I believe, will be a lot higher. But they attacked down the football field. So this is a good football team. So let's not overreact to who the Raiders lost to. I love how they utilized Todd Gurley. Early just used him as a decoy.
And then late, they ended the game with him. I mean, in the second half, he had 89 rushing yards. He had another 20 through the air. First half, just four carries for 19 yards. He's the best player on their offense, the offensive player of the league in last year. And they know, the Rams, dating back to last season, they're 10-0 when he gets at least 20 touches. But they were, like you were saying, feeling out early, and then they used him for the knockout blow. Now, I also think Goff's stats, because Goff's a guy I'm watching this year, Goff's stats are not as good as they should have been because they drew two critical pass interference penalties. Those are 80 yards worth of passes to Brandon Cooks. He doesn't get credit for. He played a better game than the stat sheet says.
All right, the Rams over the Raiders 33-13. Week one of the NFL is in the books. Take a break. Coming up on the other side, is Gronk already the best tight end of all time? Tom Brady thinks so. That's next on First Things First. On Saturday, Kent State heads to Happy Valley to take on 11th-ranked Penn State. That's 11:30 Eastern on FS1 and on the Fox Sports app. Plus, SMU faces Michigan on the Big Ten Network. Check it all out on Saturday.
Excited to watch my guy Jim Harbaugh on Michigan on Big Ten Network Saturday.
He's going to look like a genius against SMU.
To go
viral.
He
looked great this weekend against Western Michigan. Directional schools, baby.
Aaron Rodgers' epic Week 1 performance set the world on fire. And yesterday, two more people chimed in. LeBron James tweeted, quote, woke up this morning saying to myself, Aaron Rodgers, you're incredibly good at football. My guy, one of the GOATs, thank you. To which D. Wade replied, that's funny because I woke up saying to myself, Aaron Rodgers, you're incredibly good at football, but sir, why my Bears all the time?
That's the Chicago and D. Wade coming out.
And if you think Aaron Rodgers' numbers are good, Nick, which you always tell us, man, mm-hmm. best all-time passing rating, he's better against the Bears.
His numbers against the Bears are make-believe.
Yes.
I don't have going into that game, I think in his last however many, it was like 16 touchdowns, one pick. It was, I mean, he's spectacular against that team in particular. He tortures them.
All right, time for some stories to start your morning now. Still talking about how the Browns didn't lose on Sunday, nor did they win. Josh Gordon scored a touchdown in the tie with the Steelers. He wasn't even supposed to start. Cleveland's head coach, Hugh Jackson, called Gordon starting a miscommunication with Todd Haley. C, what did you make of that and of Gordon's performance?
The performance was amazing. I mean, being out of football and where this team was in the time of the game. They needed a play. Josh came up with a play. They were playing cover two there. He's able to get to the end zone before and make the catch and get down before that safety collisions him or knocked the ball away. That was an amazing play. As far as the miscommunication, I don't care. He's out there. Put the best players out there. It wasn't a big deal to me.
Yeah, I don't really care about the start, didn't start. He played the first play and then sat out the rest of the first and second series, then played the majority of the rest of the game. I think he had 69 snaps. But, I mean, this was good coverage and
yes.
An excellent throw, an even better catch. And your observation about getting down, because if he doesn't get down, not only does he take a huge hit, that ball can get jarred loose and then it's not a touchdown. Like, that was a special play that ended up being the last point scored of the game.
Moving on to the Jaguars now. Bad news for the struggling offense. According to Doug Marrone, Leonard Fournette has a minor hamstring injury. No word on whether he'll miss any time yet. But, Nick, how big of a deal is this for the Jaguars offense?
It's potentially a big deal, even though I like T.J. Yeldon. But you kind of have to bake this in with Leonard Fournette. This was an issue in college. This was an issue throughout last year where he's a guy who, at every level that I'm aware of, he's dealt with these nagging injuries that either make him limited or knock him out a week or two.
Yeah, I'm not so much worried about the soft tissue, but you're right. In high school and at LSU, he's a collision guy. So he's going to bang into people, and he's going to get hurt. It's more importantly, they face New England this weekend, so you'd like him at full strength when they face the Pats.
All right, finally, the Bills are still undecided who will start week two versus the Chargers. They're stuck between Nathan Peterman, who threw for 24 yards on Sunday, Josh Allen, who supposedly isn't as good as Peterman, or me. CC, who should the Bills start at quarterback?
Wait a second. I ain't like that one.
Shoot, is it me?
You don't like it. You got one head, you got one tail, so you didn't like either one.
This is what's going to happen. This is a bad situation, and I'd much rather them put Peterman in, and the reason why, because if one of these careers is lost or as damage is done to one of these kids' psyche,
yep.
I have to sacrifice Peterman because I got Josh Allen, he still got hope. Like, he hasn't lost football. He hasn't thrown interceptions. Like, he still got hope, and with this offensive line, you do not want a quarterback. Nick and I, we talk about it all the time. You can get your career knocked out of you in the first couple years. All right? He has no chance of being successful in Josh Allen. All right? We are a sum of our decisions. And when they decided, after making the playoffs, after this long drought, that we're going to move away from Tyrod Taylor, and you don't make the right decision, they thought they had something in A.J. McCarron. No, didn't have anything. Peterman, he still might be an NFL quarterback, but he's in a bad situation. He should be sitting somewhere learning. Now we got two kids not ready for pro football. There is no good choice. With that offensive line, I mean, Shady McCoy could only do so much. It's not a good decision, but I have to go with Peterman because I've invested too much in Josh. If Josh fails, a lot of people are going to get fired.
Yeah, and by the way, if you care, next week or this week, Chargers. Bosa might be back. We don't know, but they got Ingram either way. And the week after that, Minnesota. So have fun. And how did they get the draft capital to move up to ultimately get Josh Allen? Oh, they traded away their left tackle. That was one of the moves they made. Like, I get it, but when you say a sum of your decisions, even if you're watching and you're like, man, Tyrod stinks. He's a check down guy. He was 15 of 40 this weekend. Okay, fine. Sam Bradford was available. The team that went out and got him, by the way, they said, we're drafting a quarterback still, but we're going to spend our salary cap room to get him so our young guy doesn't have to start. Case Keenum was available. Teddy Bridgewater was available. Guys were available to where it be placeholders or just be a veteran. Josh McCown, like just to be a veteran guy to where you don't have this awful choice. Like, it would not be fair to Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. But, and I know we can kind of flippantly say, you know, Peterman's got to be the sacrificial lamb. But Nate Peterman has become a national punchline, and it is not his fault. He didn't campaign for them to bench Tyrod. He didn't campaign. He didn't expect to be put in this situation. But he has, and he's clearly not ready.
Last year when he had that bad game, 5 interceptions, Man, the Chargers, they were in protest because they took him out the game. They wanted to keep him in the game.
Yeah.
So now the Chargers are sending flowers and all kinds of things, saying, Buffalo, please start Peterman again because that's who they're going
it's
to be.
It's a great
playing.
Point that that was the game. If people forgot, that the game where he had five interceptions in the first half, it was against the Chargers.
And who are they playing next week?
The Chargers. It's Chargers and then the Vikings. Like, they – the Peterman is – this is – here's an interesting dichotomy, and I'll leave it at this. All-time NFL record holder for best quarterback rating through three starts, Tyrod Taylor. All-time NFL record holder for worst quarterback rating through three starts, Nate Peterman.
Get out of here.
And he is their best option. That's the situation Buffalo, a playoff team from last year, has put themselves in.
Should have gone with me. Let's talk some Patriots now.
You got a chance.
On Sunday.
You got a
exactly. You wouldn't throw any picks. You just turtle back there. I can outrun you.
Catch me first. Boom. Yeah, yeah. On Sunday, Rob Gronkowski had seven catches, 123 yards, and a touchdown in the Patriots win over the Texans. On Monday, Tom Brady said Gronk could be the greatest tight end ever to play. I can't wait to see what happens on Tuesday. Here's Brady with high praise for his longtime teammate.
He's the best tight end in the league, probably the best to ever play the game. And when you have that guy on your team, you got to give him looks. He runs every route, every part of the field, short, intermediate, deep, inside, outside, takes hits, run after catch, third down, first down, red area. I mean, he's a big part of what we do. And we've all got to match his, you know, greatness, all of us, you know, in order to be a great offense.
Brady literally mentioned every single, I mean.
Every when you, part of being a football
that's great
player.
Evaluation.
When you talk like that, it doesn't sound like there's anything Gronk can do. How crucial is Gronkowski to Tom Brady and the Patriots' success, do you think, Sue?
I've never heard him say that about another player. When he got Randy Moss the best player he ever played with. And he talked about Randy Moss and everything, but he didn't talk about him that way.
Because Randy wasn't great at everything. Randy is one of my favorite players ever and one of the most exciting players to watch. But Randy had weaknesses. It's just that, and you could speak this better than me, that his strengths were so overwhelming, you could ignore them to a degree.
Right. Now, he spoke about him glowingly. He complimented him. He said things. But, I mean, this evaluation, and it's a great football evaluation. Well, what is Gronk good at? He's a great end-of-the-line blocker. What about him as a receiver? You can have him on the end of the line. You can put him in the backfield. You can move him out wide. You can shift him in the slot. That means he must be awful smart. Also, Tom Brady said something last year that Gronk's never had a bad day at work. Gronk is the juice in the Patriots locker room. He comes in, he's jovial, he's upbeat every single day. And that's what Tom Brady is talking about matching. So when Tom Brady comes to work, if he's not on top of his job, you know what? He's not the best Patriot. And that right there is motivation for him. Tom Brady recognizes what he has. He's expressed that in the Patriots. And that's why the Patriots did what we hadn't seen them do. They went in their pocketbook before the season. If this is the greatest tight end and he's the greatest quarterback just told us to keep this guy here. So that's why they gave him more money. He is one of the greatest tight ends ever, if he never plays any football. And he's essential for what they do because what they want is flexibility. And there's no offensive player in the league that's more flexible than Gronk. No player.
He can do everything. And that's what Brady listed. He listed everything. And that when you say flexible, like I'd use the word versatile. Like whatever
yes.
your game plan is, Gronk can be the best person for it at his position in the league. And you said he's got to be awful smart. And this is where Gronk, I think, does himself a bit of a disservice, but I get it. Gronk has a brand outside of football. I think it's helped him make a lot of money. He's talked about how he's never spent a single of his dollar of his football money. He's only spent endorsement money. And in a team, a league that most guys are faceless, and a team that everybody seems to be faceless, Gronk is kind of a man out on his island. And part of that's his kind of frat boy persona. But his football acumen must be exemplary to be able to do the things he does in that offense and never seem to have a miscommunication with Brady. It never seems like he's run the wrong route. And what shouldn't be understated with Gronk is the armor he wears for a reason. This is one of the toughest football players in the league who every year gets beat up thoroughly throughout the year. And I know he's missed time, but he also has had a hell of a lot more games where he's played through injury or at least pain than he has had missed games. Like, he wears that brace for a reason. He's dealt with the head injuries, and he comes to work every day. He's one of the truly great players of this generation, and he does belong in the discussion of greatest to ever play his position.
No, I was going to say, you can't look at the things that Brady listed off, the routes, short, intermediate, deep, mm-hmm. inside, outside. He takes hits, he runs it in the red zone, first down. You can't look at that whole list and say, well, can you find something negative? It's just, if you had to, you'd say maybe his durability. Just the fact that he is a little injury prone, but because he plays right. the game so hard with 100% of everything he's got.
Yeah, and when you start to evaluate the players, that's one of the things going to hold him, you know, into the conversation. Correct. When you start talking about, because we got tight ends that have been durable, we have tight ends that have been versatile. So playing in this offense and playing with Brady, that also helps everything else out. But the flexibility to be able to use him, the different, I believe he plays six different positions. You know, he plays both tight ends, plays fullback, plays outside wide receiver, plays in the slot, and you can motion him, put him backfield, he can be the H-back. That's how valuable and the kind of football player. And the thing that you mentioned, Nick, is that it happens all the time, man. We judge people based on sometimes how they speak and everything, and sometimes how they look on how good they are at doing their job or what is their IQ to do their job. He's a brilliant football player. You cannot find football players that can go into New England, and that's the reason why they don't. The veteran wide receivers don't do well. The system is too hard.
They have turnover. Yep.
And he has mastered that. Yes, he is. We are watching a very, very special player, and we should recognize
that. And one thing, absent of position, whether it's tight end or wide receiver, he's one of the greatest red zone threats in league history, including wide receivers. Since he came in the league in 2010, as far as red zone production, first in yards, first in catches, first in touchdowns. That's despite missing games. That's since he came in the league, with all those games missed, nobody has more red zone catches, more red zone yards, or more red zone touchdowns. Again, that is inextricably tied to Brady. I understand that. But this guy is, on a per-game basis, he's the best to ever play the position. The lack of durability, the fact that Gonzalez seemed like he played for 20 years, that then you have...
He was versatile.
And Tony,
he was smart.
Right. Tony could do all these things, and he played forever, and he never had Brady. So, like, Tony's got a case, and Shannon did all that winning over right. all that time. Like, you can make a case for any of these guys, but Gronk, on a per-game basis, is as good as I've seen.
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up, can the Dallas Cowboys fix their offense? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Super Bowl champ Greg Jennings is here. Hey, Greg.
What's happening?
Good to see
All right,
you,
we got week one in the books. Lots to talk about, especially when it comes to the Dallas Cowboys. To say they struggled on offense against the Panthers, a bit of an understatement. They scored just 8 points. They managed just 232 yards. Some have speculated Jason Garrett needs to take over play calling for offensive coordinator Scott Linehan. Others have speculated things we can't even say on television. Garrett dismissed the idea of calling the plays. Take a listen.
I have a tremendous amount of faith in Scott. And, you know, we just have to do a better job collectively as a staff and as an offensive unit to help us move the football and score some points. And, you know, that starts with basic execution, play after play, not beating ourselves, and then finding ways to generate some big plays.
All right, TC, if it's not play calling, what has to change for the Cowboys to have success on offense?
Well, it's easy. That's the typical thing that fans always call for. The offense sputters. Forget about what's the execution. Forget about were we blocking people? Were we doing what the game plan was? This is immediately, let's just change it. That's what people always do. And if the coach is an offensive coach, oh, man, well, let's have him change the play call. This is week number one, and Nick is making sure and it's strange coming from Nick. It should be coming from you. The overreaction. Oh, don't overreact, Nick. Okay, Nick's this week number one. Don't overreact. Don't overreact in Dallas. We knew that they would have weeks where they would struggle offensively. We talked for the last 5 or 6 months. We couldn't have done a TV program with saying, hey, offensive weapons, it's going to be hard to get some separation. They're going to be 8 guys in the box. That's exactly what played out. And what they do on the outside? Greg, they didn't get any type of separation, didn't make any type of big plays. This is going to be hard for them to win. When you play that type of football, that throwback 1970 type football, where you're going to try to jam it up in there, we're going to be bigger and stronger than them, it makes it difficult in this game. Nothing came for them easy. And Greg will tell you, man, as an offensive team, you want to be able to attack teams in a lot of different ways, but you need some easy yardage. That's why now in football, they throw the ball short, throw the ball sideways, do these screens and everything so that they can get some easy yardage. And nothing was easy for the Cowboys on Sunday, Greg.
I have a suggestion.
Okay.
For the Dallas Cowboys. We should make it a Dak-friendly offense.
Well, didn't we do that?
This is what they said all offseason.
Yes.
We want to make it a Dak-friendly offense. That means when I hear Dak-friendly offense, that means get the ball out of Dak Prescott's hands and hand it to Ezekiel Elliott. But for him to only get 15 carries, you talk about we want to pound it, throwback style. They didn't even do that. They only allowed him to touch the ball 15 times from out of the backfield. Like, give the ball to Ezekiel Elliott. Allow your young quarterback to really slowly move into his position of dinking and dunking. But they have no formation variation. They have no variety. This offense is so simplistic because Dak Prescott really, I'm not going to say he has no weapons. I'm just going to say, to your point, they didn't get any separation. They didn't allow him the opportunity to really flourish.
If he has weapons, they were holstered this weekend.
They were. They were
with the safety on.
But I'm not going to put it all on them either, because Dak Prescott has to be better. When you are expected to take your team to the next level, the expectation falls on you. The weight falls on you first, and you have to start fitting balls in to windows that aren't going to be wide open. You didn't have separation like that with Dez and Jason Witten, for that matter. You just had a bigger target area. So he has to be able to do that for them to win.
Yeah, you make a good point there. With Dez and Witten, guys who haven't created a lot of separation because of their age, wear and tear, but they do have very, very good catch radius, larger than the ones that they have now. But I'm sensing that part of your problem with Dallas is either you're going to beat me doing what I do.
Yes.
He's saying, I'm going to give Zeke 30 carries. Or Greg is saying, I'm upset that you haven't developed something that your play action should come off of all of the runs. Sean McVay, if you look at all their – they run outside zone play, but all their play actions come off of that same look. What Greg is saying is Dallas – they have no variance. They don't change their formations. Their passes don't look like their runs, so they're very, very easy to defend. So from a creative standpoint, Dallas fans should be upset because they're not very, very creative. And either you're going to run Zeke 30 times or use him as a decoy. Jam him up in the line of scrimmage with the play fake and be able to create some separation on the outside, Nick.
Listen, the Cowboys had zero plays past the 50 in the entire first half. Against Carolina.
Yes.
Now, Carolina, we said all week that they're going to struggle, that Zeke, it could be a tough game for Zeke because they have a very good front seven. Mm-hmm. But we're in a league with the Jags and the Vikings and the Eagles, so I can't even say Carolina's got one of the three best front sevens in football. They just have a very good front seven, and by the way, they were missing one of their linebackers in Thomas Davis because he's out with a suspension. Star Lotulelei left this offseason. Like, they're a good front seven, but they are not an all-time. And you could not move the ball. Like, it is what has to change? Everything. Schematics have to change. The offensive line.
Don't overreact.
But here's the.
But Dak, we did see this one coming.
And Dak was sacked on Sunday on a higher percentage of dropbacks than any player in the league. So the reason you don't have wide receivers, because you spend all the money on the offensive line. We know Travis Frederick's out. So now you're down to two first-team All-Pros. And Dak is constantly under duress. And Dak doesn't make any plays. It was just everyone gets a share of the blame in this. And I don't see a fix coming. I don't see it's not a situation where, oh, but their star wide receiver's out with suspension. Oh, but this guy's hurt. Oh, but then no. I know Travis Frederick might come back, but if the fix to your offense is getting your center back, that means your offense might be irrevocably broken.
I sat here for 5 weeks. This is exactly what we said was going to happen. Mm-hmm. None of what happened on Sunday should surprise anyone, because we said Dak's not going to have anyone to throw the ball to. Dak's really going to need to step up this year if he wants this to be your team. This could be a big contract mm-hmm. situation for Dak. Mm-hmm. They're going to run the ball with Zeke, but maybe not against the Panthers, right. But they really have to go through him. And then we also heard Jerry Jones say, did we not, we're going to make this a Dak-friendly offense. How much of what you saw on Sunday was play calling? How much of it was personnel?
I think it was a culmination of both. I think when you are a player and you step onto that field, you're going to better execute that play when you trust and you believe in that play that's called. And for me, when I watched the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday, they just didn't have any fire. They didn't have any juice. And then I go back to last year where Ezekiel – or in the year before where Ezekiel Elliott made it known, we're going to do the same – we're going to run the ball. We're going to do the same thing over and over. You just have to stop us. That's who they are. That's where they had most of their success 2 years ago. They have to get back to that. Now, the offensive line has struggled since that first year of them being together, meaning Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, their rookie season. But they have pieces there that can get it done.
And the offensive line cannot be the only unit that gets credit but never blame. Here are the five highest pressured quarterbacks from week one. Cam was fifth. His left tackle's on IR. His right tackle was carted off. Nate Peterman was fourth. We talked about the Bills' offensive line. Mm-hmm. They trade away their left tackle. Tyrod Taylor is third. Joe Thomas retired. It's the Browns. Russell Wilson was second. He was the Seahawks for years haven't spent money on their offensive line. It's been the issue. And then Dak Prescott's first. Dak Prescott's the most pressured quarterback. That's maybe Dak's got to get the ball out quicker. Maybe receivers got to get open earlier. That offensive line, Tyron Smith, Lyle Collins, Zach Martin, all the rookie that they drafted in the second round, Connor Williams, they all got to play better. It can't just be Travis Frederick was holding them together.
Outside the numbers, going to spread it around. Allen Hurns, Terrence Williams, starting outside wide receivers. They have one reception apiece. Each of them. I mean, I almost had one down there in Miami this weekend. They only had one more than me.
Greg, stick around. Coming up, is Sam Darnold already on his way to being the best quarterback in Jets history? I think Sam Pepper, our producer, wrote that tease. That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Greg Jennings, Jets and Lions on Monday Night Football. Sam Darnold's night started with a pick six and ended with praise. Darnold came in after throwing a pick six. He threw for 198 yards, two touchdowns. Also got a lot of help from his defense, who picked off Matt Stafford, Matt Castle, five different times. Jets beat the Lions 48-17 last night. Here is Sam Darnold on his first ever NFL game.
On that interception, I was pretty nervous. I'm not going to lie to you guys. But after that, you know, put it behind me. I think, you know, that after the crowd got really loud after that pick, it was just, you know, oh, shoot. And then I was like, okay, here we go. You know, can't get much worse than that. So it was really that kind of thinking that was going on in my head. And then just, you know, played and knew that we had a good team. We have a really, really good team. So I knew that if I just did my job, took what the defense gave me, that I was going to be, you know, able to go out there and look back and have a successful game.
CeCe, how impressive was Sam Darnold's composure to be able to come back after throwing that interception and completely compose himself and then carry this team to a win?
Very seldom have I ever seen a guy go on to have success like that, especially a young player. I mean, I've gotten into the huddle. And, Greg, a lot of times, too, because quarterbacks and everyone just thinks the quarterbacks always have it together. I've been in the huddle with quarterbacks. They couldn't call the play. They were so nervous, shaking. Scat right, man. I was like, scat right, double pump. Right. Man. Let's go on to scat right, double pump. And these things happen. I like that Sam admitted it on the podium after the game. Man, I was nervous. Because it was, they gave him what they thought was a simple bootleg to start the game. What that means is I'm only going to read half the field.
Yeah.
That means I only probably got two guys out there. That means my protection is going to be pretty good. Now, never in the history of football has the ball been completed from that guy going back to the back. The back is just supposed to be taking out his play fake and just running out a total decoy. But he panicked. His brain froze, and he made a little league mistake. Never throw the ball back cross field. Forget about throwing the ball back cross the middle. Back cross the field.
Unless your name is Aaron Rodgers.
And, man, he was able to recover from – so for me, after that, 16 completions to seven different guys. Now, I spoke with the Jets last week as a team, and Todd Bowles has put them in tough situations through training camp. And the reason why, or one of the reasons why, that he was going to go with them because he loved how he responded after making mistakes to go on to have success and to be able to regain his confidence all through training camp. So I wasn't surprised based on talking to Todd Bowles and the Jets coaching staff last week.
I loved his disposition. I loved everything about him, his posture, his his leadership in the huddle. You heard him calling a couple plays, and there was no stuttering. There was no sense of nerves there. But to that first play of the game, it's interesting because when you go into a game, the first 15 are scripted. And so that first play, when I watch it over and over again, it's almost like he already had in his mind, this guy is going to be wide open, actually. Like, I'm gonna take that throw because he probably was told, a lot of young quarterbacks, the offensive coordinator, Jeremy Bates, look, he's going to be open. They run it all week. You run it against multiple looks, and he just threw it without actually scanning what was over there. But his ability to show resolve and bounce back, that was what was most impressive for me. When I looked at their offense, and I was listening to Brian Griese, he was saying that he talked to Jeremy Bates, their offensive coordinator, and he said, I'm not going to condense the playbook for him because that will hold him to being a rookie quarterback and performing not at his highest level. I'm going to expand the playbook. I'm going to challenge him, mm-hmm. and he will continue to grow, even tonight during this game. And we saw that. We saw him progressively get better and better. When I watched the Sunday night game, Mitchell Trubisky, it was like he thrived early, yes. and then he fizzled out.
As soon as they got off their script in the Sunday night game, like as soon as they had
it was
their
over.
Script, it was over for him. And you saw, by the way, a similar thing with the Raiders last night and Derek Carr and that offense. What you mentioned earlier, Jenna, that we talked all offseason about the Cowboys' lack of weapons. When we were talking about what teams might have less weapons on the outside, what I call skill position guys, absent of the quarterback, we said, well, I mean, the Jets are on that list. The Niners are on Buffalo's on. Man, what you saw yesterday, and I'm not saying he's going to be this every week, but when a quarterback's playing well, all of a sudden, Quincy Enunwa, Terrell Pryor.
They look like they can play.
Right. Quincy Enunwa, Terrell Pryor, and Robbie Anderson. And Robbie, we knew, had some high-level ability if you get everything together. Those three guys were targeted 14 times. Caught 10 of them, 153 yards, 2 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Quincy Enunwa was playing better than I had seen him play. Terrell Pryor had no drops, no issues.
And did you say 7 different receivers caught balls from Sam Darnold?
Of the 16 completions, 7 different ones. That right there speaks to a veteran quarterback, Nick, not a rookie quarterback.
Right, spreading the ball around. By the way, it also speaks to what the Jets are going to have to do. Because he does not have a true, reliable number one, I'm going to target him 15 times, he's going to come down with 12 catches. And so to have this game after the start he had, to after throwing a pick six, complete 80% of your passes at 10 yards per attempt and a 141 rating, like that's excellent. There's been 3 other guys in NFL history who first pass of their career was a pick six. Favre, Jameis, and Darnold. Now, that's a hell of a list. However, Favre in his game, they lost by 39. Winston in his game, they lost by 38.
Wow.
In this game, they won by 31, which speaks to the ability to overcome it.
How much of what you saw in that game was the Jets' defense, which was really on point, or what Matt Patricia brought out there with that Lions offense yesterday? They had a tough game overall.
Look, I'm not gonna even go to the Lions side of the ball because Matthew Stafford looked like he was the rookie quarterback yesterday. The interceptions that he threw were just beyond me. But this Jets defense
and Todd Bowles, yes,
and Todd Bowles, like he should get a lot of credit because they were better than what we expected last year. This year, we thought that they would be a little bit better, but we even thought that the offensive line was going to struggle a lot more.
Yes.
But getting the center, Spencer Long, it solidified a lot of their issues because when you have a guy that can point out the linebackers and where the pressure is coming from, mm-hmm. you can help a young quarterback. You can take some of that pressure off.
That's why he didn't have 30 attempts.
Absolutely. And they sprinkled the run in. They did a great job of balancing themselves and Sam Darnold. But that defense, they gave him opportunity after opportunity, possession after possession. They said they're going to call themselves New Jack City. They were New Jack City last night.
Yeah, they had a couple question marks coming into the game. The secondary, would they get enough corner play? Did they have enough explosive players to consistently throw the ball? Also, the offensive line. In all 3 of those areas, they seem to be much improved, and that leads to – we were talking about Darnold, but, man, that's some good football play. It's being developed there with the Jets.
And to the point on Bowles, you had multiple players after the game say film study
Yeah.
Leading into the game led to them calling out the plays Stafford was running. That from film study, they knew what the hand signals meant and that they knew what passes he was throwing. Multiple guys in the locker room said this.
Now, they have a new head coach, but they have the same offensive coordinator running the same system.
And so that is a credit to coaching. That is a credit to Todd Bowles and that staff getting their defense ready to take advantage of essentially Stafford tipping his pitches. And that's why he had more interceptions yesterday than he had at home all of last season.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.